you, Mr. Lukey. The subject of this sermon is Did you get that? Did you hear it? You couldn't hear it. Let me try it again. The subject of this sermon is silence. In this message, I'm going to read parts of a few different articles or short stories, and it just by chance, although maybe it wasn't completely, of course not completely by chance, but three of them are named, titled The Power of Silence. You could even call the title, my message here is The Power of Silence, or even Shh, The Power of Silence. This first article, first of three with the same title, this one's from April 22nd, 2021. I'll just read a couple paragraphs or a few statements from this. In this article, it says, chances are you're geared to filling in that time, probably without even thinking about it, by answering a few emails, doing a little work, cleaning, surfing the web, or catching up on your recorded TV shows. You may not think to yourself, I think I'll just sit in silence. The article quotes somebody named Stephanie Ludwig. Stephanie says, silence can make us uncomfortable because we're so used to distracting ourselves from what we're feeling, from difficult emotions like fear, resentment, or anger. When we're truly and intentionally silent, we have to face whatever is inside of us. We live in such a doer culture. Go, 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 do, do, do. If you really knew the blessings that come from being in silence, we would definitely make more time for it. Do any of you make time for silence? Is that something that is done with intent? Is it planned? Do you make time for silence? Silence is golden, is an idiom that most of you have heard, and of course you know the meaning of that is kind of, it's often better to say nothing, often better to be silent, and there's something golden about that. Of course, you've also probably heard the saying from parents, silence is golden unless you have children. How true is that? Almost all ages. Maybe you have a baby, a near newborn, or a baby, and you finally get the baby in the crib, in her crib, or his crib, and the baby is sleeping. You go in the other room. Maybe you lay down in bed. Maybe you sit and relax with your spouse. But what happens when there's too much silence? You start to panic, maybe, especially new parents. What's going on? I better go check on the baby. They're being too silent. Of course, two-year-olds, you know, have your antennae up if two-year-olds are in a room by them. If a two-year-old's in a room by himself or with other two-year-olds in it silent, you got to be worried. What's going on in there? What about teenagers? What if teenagers are off in a room by themselves being silent? Kind of wonder, all right, what's going on in there? So silence can be golden unless you have children. In that case, silence is suspicious. A longer form of this idiom, which was new to me when I was preparing this message, but a longer form is speech is silver, silence is golden. Some say this originated in 9th century Arabic culture. And I like this form, this longer form, because it shows us that there is value in speech. It says speech is silver. Comparing speech and silence, sometimes silence is better. It's golden. But there's still value in speech, and it has silver. There's value there. Definitely times when speech is good, but there's time when silence is good, and it is golden. Silence can be a noun or a verb, and as I go through this message, we'll kind of use it as both. As a noun, of course, it means the absence of sound. And as a verb, it can mean to prohibit someone from speaking. So, for example, this happened in my house this morning. I was taking a little nap. And the silence was pierced by a couple of my daughters belting out a very nice song. I was awoken from my nap, but it was a beautiful sound in many ways, but the silence was broken. As a verb, an example sentence is, she was silenced by the officer's stern look. So there's different ways you can use the word silence. This message was inspired by a very familiar passage in Revelation. I think it was during the Feast of Tabernacles that it was quoted, and it made me think about it and take note. And we'll come to that passage in a few minutes, but we'll save that for a little bit later. But to start, we're going to read some of the words of Solomon and how he talks about silence and quietness. So we'll start in Proverbs 17, verse 1. We'll read this short verse, and then we'll pick up a couple of verses in Ecclesiastes. Again, thinking about the wisdom of Solomon, of course, which came from God. Proverbs 17, verse 1. This says, better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. And then skip ahead a few pages in your Bible, if you don't mind, to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 6. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 6, we'll read this one. It's a very similar verse, very similar bit of wisdom from Solomon. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 6 says, better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. So in these two passages, the object, the value, the thing that you would rather have is quietness. So it's what to be seeking. It's the thing that is good. And both of these passages are saying it's better to have less. It's better to have only a dry morsel to have quietness. So it's that quietness that is something to attain to. And you would give up a nice meal if that's what it took to have this quietness. You would rather have just a handful to have quietness. So there's value that that is placed in this quietness. So we're going to be exploring that today. One of the reasons I had us turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, even though it said about the same thing as Proverbs, is I want us to be close to the next passage, which is Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 7. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 7 is very, very famous verse, along with the verses before and after it. Have any of you been to a teen camp with Mr. Tom Schultz? So if you have, you may know that he likes to sing. He will start a lot of his messages with a song. It's fun and engaging. If he were talking about this verse, I could only imagine that he would be singing this, not during a sermon, I assume, but at teen camp. If he was mentioning this, that song would come to his head. So anyone know, just a bit of trivia, don't shout out, but just inside your head, what was the group that made this song famous? All right, let's read this verse, Ecclesiastes 3, verse 7. I'll try not to sing because that would not be good for any of you to hear that. It says, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. So there is a time to be silent, and then there is a time to speak. And before I spend most of the message time on the silence part, I do want to at least acknowledge that speaking and silence should go together in a good way. Paul wrote in both 1 Corinthians and 1 Timothy about times when women should be silent. But that's not always the case. Women should not always be quiet. Let's look at Esther chapter 4, verse 14. So again, I'm going to be emphasizing silence, but I do want to show the balance and show that both of these things work well together. So again, thinking about Paul saying, women, under some conditions, you should be silent. But let's look at Esther 4, verse 14. This is, I believe it's Mordecai talking to Esther. Esther, it says, for if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Esther was being told that she should not be silent. And she was as you know the story very well, in a very difficult situation. Her speaking might actually lead to her death. But she spoke because that was the time for her to speak. It was not time for her to be silent. The easiest thing for her would have been to be silent. But it was her time to speak, and she did. And of course, we never want God to be silent. We can read in Psalms from David and Asaph how they prayed to God, "Do not be silent." We want God to be talking to us. We want to be hearing from God. And of course, we're told, be ready to give an answer. We're told that there are times when we should be teaching and correcting. So again, there is a time for speaking, but there is a time for silence. Job 13, verse 5 says, "Oh, that you would be silent, and it would be to your wisdom." So there's a key to both speaking and silence, is to know when you should be silent. And that seems to be the bigger challenge for most people. Most people, or many people, have less of an issue of speaking, maybe when they should, but keeping silent when we should is often a challenge. This verse from Job, again, that says, "Oh, that they would be silent, and it would be to their wisdom," reminds me of a little quip. It says, "It is better to be thought of a fool and to remain silent than to speak and remove all doubt." I can tell you that there have been times when I should have kept my mouth shut, but I said something that was wrong, that was maybe even a little dumb, or maybe even a lot dumb, and I would have been way better off not saying a word. My wife was our whole family was in a conversation. There was a young person who was talking and talking about something, and this person was completely wrong. Completely wrong. And it seemed like the more the person talked, the more wrong the talk was. Certainly in that case, that person maybe should have held back a little bit. My wife was wise in that case because she didn't challenge the person. There was no need for that. She held her silence even though what was being said wasn't right. But it wasn't a case where the wrong speaking was going to lead to some wrong action. So in that case, it just made sense to let it go. But this person maybe could have kept the mouth shut at that point. So silence, like many things, is a tool. The wise, which we should all be striving to be wise, are going to use silence not too little and not too much. Amos writes, there's an interesting verse. You can go dig that up later. I won't have you turn there or even mention the verse or chapter, but it says that the prudent keep silent at this time, for it is an evil time. Now, he was speaking to people at the time when he was writing, but how true is that for us today? We live in an evil time. What should we be doing? Well, if the advice that Amos gave to the people at that time applies to us, and I think in many cases it can, in this evil time, we should be prudent. We should often be prudent. Well, we should always be prudent, and that means that we should often be silent. Something to reflect on. And our silence can come in many different forms. If we're going to be silent, what does that mean? Certainly, there's actions, there's words, there's thoughts. We can be silent by not taking an action, by not getting upset about something and going out and doing something to something evil has happened. Maybe through our wisdom we judge that, no, this is a time I should not act. Maybe there are times where you judge through godly wisdom that I need to not say anything. It's just better not to say anything. And maybe there are times when we even need to control our thoughts and be silent even in our head and not let certain things upset us. We should certainly be upset by evil, but if we allow that being upset to be so noisy in our head that we cannot move on to other things, that we cannot move on to the, Philippians 4 verse 8 tells us, what should we be thinking about? Thinking about things that are lovely, thinking about things that are uplifting. So we should be careful about the noise that's inside our head. We should certainly be careful about the noise from our words and the noise from our actions. Let's look at Psalms chapter 39. Psalms 39, 1 through 4, and we're going to read some words from David. David, it seems like in many ways you could describe David as having a very noisy life. There were so many things going on in his life, so many good things, so many challenging things, so many difficulties. He had a noisy life. He spent much of his, a number of years of his life running, on the run, whether it was from Saul, King Saul, whether it was from his sons. He was running. He was in battles. He had challenges of all kinds, and he writes about them, and we can read his thoughts, and we can learn from that. But you can just imagine David had all kinds of things going on in his head, and you really don't even have to imagine because you can read about it. So let's look again at Psalms 39, verse 1 through 4. I said, I will guard my ways, lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. I was mute with silence. I held my peace, even from good, and my sorrow was stirred up. My heart was hot within me. While I was musing, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue. So David's describing a time where it was noisy inside his head. There were a lot of bad things happening. He was dealing with people around him that were doing evil and doing wrong. He was upset. But he says he kept silent, even though it was burning inside him. But when he finally spoke, what did he do? What did he say? So verse 4, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. So when he had all this noise inside of his head, when he had maybe even every right to shout out and to confront people, he went to God, and he asked God for help. And specifically, he asked God to basically humble him, show him how frail he was. This was at least one situation of how David dealt with this. And he chose silence when it came to interacting with other people. And he chose to go to God and ask for God to tell him what to do. The second article that I'll read from is also, like I said, The Power of Silence. This was written by Sarah Monk from July 2018. It says, it is clear that silence has power. Like any power, it can be used to hurt or to heal, and perhaps this is why people respond to it so variably. For some people, silence means loneliness, isolation, or awkwardness. It can be used to indicate emotional withdrawal, disapproval, or even punishment. In our language, the word silence is often used with negative connotations, a conspiracy of silence, being given the silence treatment, lifting the veil of silence. In our busy, noisy world, many people seem to fear silence. All right, going on a little further. Research is beginning to suggest that silence itself is beneficial both physically and psychologically. Spending time in silence has been found to have positive effects on the body in terms of reduced blood pressure, boosting the immune system, reducing blood cortisol, promoting hormone regulation, and the prevention of arterial plaque formation. Psychological benefits of silence can include enhanced creativity, self-focus, self-control, self-awareness, perspective, and spirituality. In a public place, rarely do you see someone just sitting. The minute they are alone, they check their phone and then use it to connect to some digital input. Are we so unwilling to be alone with ourselves? And what is the level of noise in our society and the absence of silence doing to our mental health? Spending time in nature can be just sitting in your garden, going for a walk. Learning to use the power of silence has wonderful potential to improve our lives and is free to all with the persistence to cultivate it. So again, that's from the article. There's many interesting and I think helpful ideas in that article, talking about how this can help us in many different ways. And the thing that I ended with from this article was, you have to have the persistence to cultivate it. So it's not necessarily an easy thing. I know I experience this, like, okay, I'm going to sit and do something. Maybe it's Bible study, maybe it's meditation. Maybe it's just sit quietly. And almost immediately, things start popping up, whether it's in your head, whether it's around you, whether it's on your phone, whatever it is. There's so many things that are trying to take your attention, trying to take the silence away from you. It is not easy, at least not easy for me. There was a blog posting on our church website, the Godly Women blog, and it was titled, Ding Ding, Navigating the Noise of Notifications. This was written by Mrs. Lindy Fultz. And in this article, in this blog, she's talking about how our attention so easily gets pulled in by our phones when we get notifications, where they're coming from. And interestingly, she kind of has a little bit of almost like a discussion with herself in this article. At least this is how I interpreted it. She's like, well, should I respond or not respond? Because if I ignore it, you know, I should ignore it so that I can have time alone. And definitely there are times when you should. But then she also was kind of explaining that, well, if she ignores it too long, she might be causing some hurt feelings because somebody might have sent her something, maybe even sent her something very important. Should she respond? Should she look? So there's this dilemma. And again, silence is good, but there's a time when you shouldn't be silent. So trying to find, you guys, all of us have to find that right balance of when do we put the phone away or when do we engage with people and help them? Because we can be very helpful through our phone and by connecting with people. That's where wisdom comes in. All right, so in this message, we're going to explore a few ways. We're going to explore silence and learn how it can help and how we can better use this tool. I think hopefully I've shared a few points that are useful already. But I wanted to start by showing that silence is often associated with an important event. So when there have been some important events, there's silence connected with that. And I believe that silence helps to magnify the importance of the event. I'll start with a few simple examples and then share something, at least in my mind, is very important and very amazing in many ways. Think about the noise at the beginning of church services, especially if you're meeting in a small room, maybe low ceilings, a lot of people. You've probably been in those cases, and there is so much noise, and the room can be very, very noisy, and it's a good thing. That's a case where it's good for people to be talking to each other. But when it's time for services to start, silence. There is silence. The song leader will come up and ask for silence. In a very noisy room, will hopefully quickly, but we'll get quiet because we're about to have God's Sabbath service. And there needs to be silence associated with that. Acts records an interesting event when it is said that Paul had permission to speak. I think about that and say, well, when does Paul need permission to speak? It seems like any time he's ready, but he had permission to speak. And then it said, he motioned to the people. And then it says, there was a great silence. And then he spoke. There was a great silence before Paul spoke. Paul was about to say some very important things to the people. And before that happened, before he began to speak, there was a great silence. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7. And we'll see how silence was a part of the last Passover and a part of Christ's sacrifice and death. Silence was prophesied in Isaiah, and we'll read that, and then we'll turn to the New Testament and show and see where that prophecy came to be, or at least in part. Isaiah chapter 53, verse 7 says, he was oppressed, of course speaking of Christ, he was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before the shearers is silent. So he opened not his mouth. Isaiah is recording about this future event and talking about how Christ did not open his mouth and he was quiet. Let's look at Mark chapter 14, verse 61. This is one of the places where Christ chose to be silent. Mark 14, 61 says, "But he kept silent and answered nothing. And again the high priest asked him, saying to him, 'Are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed?'" So have you ever thought about it? Why did Christ keep silent? There were times he did answer questions during his trials, but in cases he kept silent. Do you ever consider why he kept silent? I don't think I know the answer, but let me share a few thoughts. For one thing, there was no value. Him talking was not going to change the outcome of anything. He was silent because he was obedient. He knew what he needed to do. He knew what needed to happen. He was obedient. And part of that was that he kept silent. So in this important event, one of the most important events that has ever happened, there was silence associated with it. Another very important event was recorded in Acts chapter 10. It tells of Peter's vision and the Holy Spirit coming to the Gentiles. In the next chapter, and we'll look at Acts chapter 11, verse 18. In the next chapter, in chapter 11, Peter shares this exciting news in Jerusalem with those of the circumcision. These people were contending with Peter and getting on to him for eating with the uncircumcised men. Let's read Acts chapter 11, verse 18. It says, "And when they heard these things, they became silent, and they glorified God, saying, 'Then God has also granted to the Gentiles repentance to life.'" So it seems like these people who at first were like, "No, this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing these things. Don't eat with the Gentiles." And at least some of them, they got it. They listened to Peter, and they understood. And the first thing was they became silent. At this awesome time when the Gentiles were going to be granted the chance for life, the people became silent. And then they glorified God. And then Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. So again, thinking about how silence is often associated with important events. This is the verse I mentioned that is kind of the reason I put this message together. Revelation is a very loud book in many ways, talking, of course, about trumpets blasting, talking about angels and the 24 elders singing. There's a lot of good things. And of course, it talks about wars and battles. There's a lot of noise throughout the book of Revelation. Some of it's good noise, some of it's bad, certainly all of it leading up to something wonderful. But among all of this noise, let's look at Revelation chapter 8, verse 1. So John has been shown these visions, and all of these things are happening. Again, incredible events, lots of noise, lots of activity, lots of good things and lots of bad things happening. And we get to Revelation 8, verse 1. And it says, "When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour." What was that like for John? I mean, he had just been blasted with so much imagery, so many things. And then there's silence for about half an hour. To me, that's just an incredible thing, to just pause for half an hour with silence, wondering, thinking about the things that he had seen, wondering what's coming up next. But this silence was associated with a very important event. Moving on to considering about silence. Silence is a verb, it's an action word. There are times when people need to be silenced. And let's consider an example of that. And this was in Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 8. So Nehemiah caused nobles and leaders to be silenced because he exposed them for their wrongdoing. The Jewish people had been redeemed from other nations, but now the Jewish leaders were putting them back into bondage. The people cried out because of their suffering, and Nehemiah heard their cry. He addressed the problem by rebuking the nobles and the rulers. In Nehemiah 5, verse 8, it says, "And I said to them, according to our ability, we have redeemed our Jewish brethren who sold us to the nations. Now, indeed, will you sell your brethren, or should they be sold to us?" And then they were silenced and found nothing to say. So how were these people silenced? They were silenced by the words of Nehemiah, who was, of course, sharing God's truth. He was saying, this is what God believes. God is love, and you are not being loving. It's basically what he was saying to them. Through God's words, Nehemiah silenced them. Similarly, as we went over the example of Peter speaking to those of the circumcised, when Peter shared God's word with them, and they got it, they were silenced. There was nothing more that they could say. So we can silence others by sharing God's truth. But let's look at 1 Peter 2, verse 15, and consider another way that we can silence Peter. Where we can silence people. This is in 1 Peter 2, verse 15. So maybe there are times where we should use our words, or we should use God's words to silence people if we are in that position to do that. But this verse shares another way that we can silence people. It says, 1 Peter 2:15, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." So it's our example. It's by us doing good. It's by us following God's way of life. That is a way to silence foolish men. It's not necessarily through our words, but it's how we live our life. By living right, by doing good, by following the example set by Christ, we are putting those who are foolish to silence. Maybe we put them to silence now. Maybe it'll be a time in the future when they realize, I should have listened a little more. That's probably the best way for us to be silencing other people, is through our example. Look at Psalms chapter 31 and verse 17. Again, thinking about another way that we should be silencing people. Psalms 31, verse 17. Here in the Psalms, we'll read 17 and 18. It says, "Do not let me be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon you. Let the wicked be put to shame. Let them be silent in their grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak insolent things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous." So David, I didn't check. I assume this was David writing this psalm. He asked God to put others to silence. So that's another key aspect that we can. If there are times where maybe we need somebody to be a little quieter who's around us, we could choose to use our own words, and that may be appropriate. We could choose, and we should be continuing to set the right example, and maybe after some period of time they'll get it. But we also have the option, and we should choose this option as well. Pray to God and ask him for help. Ask him to do the silencing. We don't necessarily need that. We may not be in the position to do that. We may not have the power or authority to do that. It may not be appropriate for us to do that. Turn to God. Ask him to silence others. So most of the time, we should be asking for God's help to silence people who are doing or speaking wrong that are around us. We should always set the right example with our good works and see what value there is in silencing others. These are some of the best ways to do this. So let's let God do the silencing. And of course, then turning inwardly a little bit more, we need to be silent so that we can listen to God or to other wise counsel. If there's too much noise in our life, how are we going to hear God? And this noise can come in so many different forms, right? Can be just always doing things, always being active, always having something that you're doing. Interacting, being around people is a good thing, but if that's all you do, if you don't have time to yourself, if you don't have time to break away and to be silent, you're not going to be having a chance to listen to God. Having entertainment options all around you is taking away your silence. The right amount of entertainment is not bad, but is it too much? When I was growing up, I watched the nightly news. A little weird, having a conversation with somebody, I think just last week, about another person who was young and watched the nightly news. In those days, back in the good old days, you could watch all the news, basically, because mostly the nightly, the national news would be on for 30 minutes a day, and typically all three stations that were, at least that I could view, were on about the same time. So you could watch all of the national news in 30 minutes of time and still have 23 and a half hours to do everything else. Well, nowadays, you're like, I'm going to watch the news. It's on 24 hours a day. Not only that, it's on how many different stations? You could set up multiple TVs, and I know some people do this. I mean, at least I'm pretty sure some people do this, where they have different news stations on at the same time. You could be like, okay, I'm going to watch the news, which that's a good thing, right? We're told to watch and pray always. So I'm going to watch the news, and you never turn it off. That's the noise that's coming in all the time, and you think, well, maybe that's a good thing because I need to keep up with world events, but it never stops. It's always there. Maybe we're getting too much of that. So again, we need to think about how are we setting aside time for silence so that we can be listening to God and to other counsel. One of the articles talked about the persistence to cultivate the silence. It's not necessarily easy. Some of the articles I was reading from talked about a little bit of a fear of silence because you don't want to be alone. You don't want to have distractions because then you have to know what's really inside you. Not necessarily pleasant at times, I suppose, but we need to have that so that we can hear God. Let's look at James 1 verse 19. James 1:19 says, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath." We need to be silent at times. And then we can hear more. Because if we're not silent, we're not going to be hearing things. I worked with a person, a very nice guy, very smart. He was very interesting. We would have he and I used to be peers for a while. He and I still work at the same company. He's transferred into a different group, so I don't interact with him very often anymore. But he and I were peers, so we would talk pretty regularly, and we would have phone calls or internet calls, more correctly, I guess. And he would start by talking, and then he would get to the point. He'd ask me a question like, "Jeff, what do you think about such and such?" And without even pausing, he would start to answer for me. He'd be like, "Well, you're probably thinking this, and you're probably thinking that, and so on and so on." And he would just keep going. And at times, if I felt like we needed to have some dialogue, I would try to figure out when to interrupt him and share what I was really thinking. But many times, I just kind of judge the situation. It's like, well, it's probably not that important. So he would just talk and talk. And then he would ask another question and just talk and talk. And I would just kind of sit back and maybe a little bit deviously, I was almost entertained by hearing him ask me questions and then answering it for me. So that was a little bit interesting. Now, I have another challenge. I have a bigger challenge for me is that I will ask a question, and I'll pause for the other person to answer, and they answer. But my problem is I forget to listen. So neither of these cases is better or worse than the other. Maybe the other person feels a little bit better about it. But somebody will start talking and answering my question, and a minute in, I'm thinking, I don't know what this person just said. And it's not good. It's bad. And unfortunately, there are cases where sometimes maybe the question wasn't super critical, so if I don't know what the person said, maybe it's okay. But there are times where I really needed to know the answer. So then I have to figure out how to tactfully ask the person to tell me the answer again. Not good. So again, it's not just a matter of, I guess my point is, it's not just a matter of being silent, but you have to listen as well. Let's look at Psalms chapter 62. We'll read a couple verses from Psalms chapter 62. Verse 1, and then we'll read verse 5. Both of these seem to say something very similarly. Psalm 62, verse 1 says, "Truly my soul silently waits for God. From him comes my salvation." And then dropping down to verse 5, it says, "My soul wait silently for God alone, for my expectation is from him." So we need to be silent and wait for God and listen to him. We need to find times for us to make silence, get away from the noise, and listen to what God has to say. In this, I don't know if it's a little bit out of context, but Revelation 3, verse 20 came to mind when I was thinking about that, that we need to make time for silence. We need to make time for quietness so that we can listen to God. Revelation 3, verse 20, Jesus Christ is saying, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him, and he with me." And I kind of wondered, in the context of this message, if we don't have silence in our life, if we don't have enough silence in our life, are we going to hear Christ knocking at the door? Are we going to hear his voice if our lives are too noisy? How are we going to hear these things? We need to be silent at times. We need silence in our life. We need enough silence in our life to listen to what God has to say. All right, the third story, titled "The Power of Silence." This is a short story, not a news article. Let's go through this. Once a farmer lost his precious watch while working in his barn. It may have appeared to be an ordinary watch to others, but it held deep sentimental value. After searching high and low among the hay for a long time, the old farmer got exhausted. However, the tired farmer did not want to give up the search for his watch and requested a group of children playing outside the barn to help. He promised an attractive reward for the person who could find his beloved watch. After hearing about the reward, the children hurried inside the barn and went around the entire stack of hay to find the watch. After a long time of looking for the watch in the hay, some of the children got tired and gave up. The number of children looking for the watch slowly decreased, and only a few tired children were left. The farmer gave up his hope of finding his watch and called off the search. When the farmer was closing the door, a little boy came up to him and requested the farmer to give him one more chance. The farmer did not want to miss any chance of finding the watch, so he left the little boy in the barn. After a little while, the little boy came out with the watch in hand. The farmer was happily surprised and asked how the boy succeeded in getting the watch while everyone, including him, had failed. The boy replied, "I just sat there trying to listen to the watch's ticking. In silence, it was much easier to listen to it and direct the search toward the sound." The farmer was delighted to get the watch, rewarded the little boy as promised. The end of the story is, the quieter you become, the more you can hear. I reworded this a little bit for the purpose of this message and said it like this: the quieter you become, the more you can hear Christ's voice. I actually put this into practice. I was, as I was preparing this message a few weeks ago, I had a water leak in my backyard, and I couldn't find it. I searched here and there, and I couldn't find the water leak, and I thought about this story. So I went to a place where maybe water was leaking, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna be quiet, no noise. And as soon as I said that, a guy comes by on his golf cart talking loudly. Nothing wrong with it, but it just was that instant. And literally, as soon as he starts talking, dogs start barking. And then there's birds in the tree. I'm not making this up. I just couldn't believe it. Like, this is so ironic. There were nothing wrong with those noises. There were nice noises, just not at that right time. So I let those pass by, and I listened. And I couldn't hear anything, so I went to another spot, a spot I'd previously checked, a spot I'd like, oh, this there could be water leak here. I didn't see any. I couldn't tell. So I got quiet, and I bent down with my ear and listened. And sure enough, there was the water leak. I found it. The quieter you become, sometimes the more you can hear. Let's look at Genesis 24, verse 21. Another interesting case where remaining silent can help you hear something. This is in the case where I think it was Abraham's servant went to find a wife for Isaac. Genesis 24, 21 says, "And the man was wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not." So instead of just running his mouth and talking and saying things and just going on and on, he remained silent and listened to God and, of course, got the answer. Let's look at Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 7. Zephaniah 1, verse 7 says, "Be silent in the presence of the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is at hand. For the Lord has prepared a sacrifice. He has invited his guests." So we need silence, and we need to come to God in silence so that we are listening to him, and that not just before God, but any wise counsel. We need to have some silence so we can hear that wise counsel and listen and learn and be able to do the right thing. So I also want to talk about how silence brings about and it represents a sense of peace. Silence brings about peace, but also is used to represent peace. Let's look at Zechariah chapter 1, verse 11. This is such a nice verse. It gives us hope for the future. And it ties in silence and a wonderful future. It says, "So they answered the angel of the Lord, who stood among the myrtle trees, and said, 'We have walked to and fro throughout the earth, and behold, all the earth is resting quietly.'" What a nice thought that is. Our earth, our world is not resting quietly nowadays, right? There are so many things happening almost anywhere in the world. You could take your globe and spin it and just put your finger down, and probably not far from wherever you touched, there's noise going on, there's conflict, there's bad things happening. But there's going to be a time where the earth is going to be resting quietly. What a wonderful future. When we think about the world, there's many things that we cannot control, of course. Most things we cannot control. But we can have peace of mind. We do have some control and can bring peace of mind in some ways by getting away from the noise wherever possible. We can aim or strive for this peace as much as possible in our life. We can try within whatever we control with whatever is in our realm, we can try to put this passage from Zephaniah into practice and have peace and quiet, whether that's in our house, whether that's in one room of our house, whether that's just in our minds, because that's all we have control over. But there are things that we can do to have this peace, the future peace, that we can live at least to some extent with that peace as best as we can. So again, continuing on, thinking about how silence is associated with peace and good things. Let's look at 1 Chronicles chapter 22 and verse 9. When the kings are described in Chronicles and Kings, Samuel, it's often they're often summarized as a bad king and bad things were happening, and in a few cases there was a good king and good things were happening. In this case, is a prophecy about Solomon. 2 Chronicles 22, verse 9 says, "Behold, a son shall be born to you, who shall be a man of rest, and I will give him rest from all his enemies all around. His name shall be Solomon, for I will give peace and quietness to Israel for his day, for in his days. So this quietness is associated with peace. Now, I have no doubt during the time of Solomon, there was a lot of noise, a lot of good noise. I assume there were a lot of parties, a lot of happiness, a lot of joy and noise associated with those events. But overall, there was a sense of quietness. While Solomon was king, there were no wars. His father had wars all around him, and his son and his grandsons had wars all around them. But during the time of Solomon, there was not much fighting, and there was this quietness. When describing Asa, it said Asa reigned, and there was quiet in the land for 10 years. During the realm of Jehoshaphat, it was quiet, and God gave rest all around. Earlier in the days of Gideon, it says the country was quiet for 40 years. This is something that we can look forward to, but it's also something that I think we should challenge ourselves to have that quietness in our lives wherever possible. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 32. Isaiah 32, and we'll look at verses 17 and 18. Again, thinking about this future, that's this quietness that's coming to us. It says, the work of righteousness will be peace, and the effect of righteousness, quietness and assurance forever. My people will dwell in a peaceful habitation and secure dwellings and in quiet resting places. So we will have that quiet resting places. We'll have quietness and assurance forever. That is what's coming. That's what should encourage us to keep on keeping on. The future is great, but what is it we can be doing now? Let's look at two verses that I think shows what we can be doing now to have peace in our lives. The first is 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 11. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11. We know that future quietness is coming, but what about in our lives today? We often have many challenges and a lot of things that are noise in our lives that we have to deal with. But what should we be aspiring to? It says here, 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we have commanded you. So Paul is writing here, sharing God's wisdom. Says we should be aspiring to lead a quiet life. Are we making changes in our life to have a quiet life? That's what we're told to aspire to. Try to take away the unnecessary noise. Again, like I said, I want to just make sure I keep repeating this. It's not that you should be sitting in your room all alone with no noise and complete silence, right? I mean, there is joy and there is noise from good things, but overall, we should have a quiet life. That's what we're told to aspire to. It's something else that's interesting is Paul told Timothy. He said, we know this pretty well, right? Paul told Timothy to pray for those who are in authority, right? We're familiar with that. Why? Why did he say? I mean, he follows this up immediately. Why are we to pray for those in authority? Says so that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. So this is something we should be praying for, that our aspiration is to have a quiet and peaceable life. Let's look at 1 Peter 3, verse 4. 1 Peter 3, verse 4. Again, what is it we should be doing now to have a little bit of that future peace and quiet in our lives? Says 1 Peter 3, verse 4, rather let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. So again, there's this idea of silence, this quiet spirit that we should be looking forward to. It's kind of interesting as I thought about this quiet spirit. We all have different personalities. Just to use this as an example, we could think of an extrovert and an introvert, just kind of use those two buckets, right? There's nobody that's a pure extrovert, nobody's a pure introvert, and these are tendencies and things like that, right? But just for example, you might think of an extrovert as they're not a quiet person, right? They're loud, they're interacting, they're around people, they're talking, they're joking maybe, they're telling stories, they're inviting people to dinner, there's just noise around that person because that's a little bit of their personality. And then you may see somebody who's more of an introvert. They're quiet. Maybe they're having one-on-one conversations. But for both of these types of people, that underlying spirit, what is it like? The extrovert, you might think, oh, that person's loud and should be more quiet. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. But what's going on? What's their spirit like? So is that extrovert inside in his heart or her heart? Is it like, I need to be around people. If I'm not around people, something bad's going to happen. I need people telling me how cool I am. I need people telling me what a great time we're having. I need to be doing something all the time because if I'm not, something's bad and I feel horrible, right? So they may be going about doing some of these things that may look good, but inside of them, they don't have a quiet spirit because they're just needing that attention. Or they're needing that activity, so they're not feeling lonely. But maybe that extrovert who does seemingly all of the same things, but what's inside of them? They could still have a quiet spirit inside. They could still be thinking, I want to be around people because I love these people. I just enjoy time with other people. And so they do the things that they can do that lead to that. And they have that quiet spirit inside of them, even though it may look like they're leading a very loud life. And then think about the introvert. You might find an introvert who isn't quiet inside. They look like they're quiet, but inside there is just turmoil. They're nervous. They're anxious. They're worried about what people think. They don't say anything because they're afraid of being made fun of, or they're afraid of saying the wrong thing. So you may look at somebody who's quiet on the outside, but inside they might not be leading a quiet life. But the other introvert, who may look on the outside like they're doing, like the person's doing the same thing, but on the inside they have a quiet spirit, and they say, you know, I love everyone around me. But I really love having conversations, one-on-one conversations, where we can talk about things and have this connection. And they have that quiet spirit. And maybe they're also quiet on the outside. So I think we need to think about how you are and what you're like. There's kind of the outside appearances, but inside, what's your spirit? Are you having a quiet spirit? So the final passage I want to share and I want us to look at is Zephaniah 3, verse 17. The imagery here is just very beautiful. Zephaniah 3, verse 17 says, "The Lord your God in your midst, the mighty one, will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you with his love. He will rejoice over you with singing." God wants to quiet us with his love. And we should be striving to be like God, so we should be looking for opportunities to quiet others with our love. So we should be striving and aspiring to live quiet lives, putting our hope in God, who will bring peace and quietness to the whole earth. All right, final story. This one is not called The Power of Silence. This is called The Silent Treatment. A little short story here. It says, a man and his wife were having some problems at home and were giving each other the silent treatment. Two of my children have heard this message. This will be the third time. Hopefully I'll put it on the shelf after this. Suddenly, so the husband and wife were giving each other silent treatment. Suddenly the man realized that the next day he would need his wife to wake him at 5 a.m. for an early morning business flight. Not wanting to be the first to break the silence and lose, he wrote on a piece of paper, "Please wake me at 5 a.m., and he left it where he knew she would find it. The next morning, the man woke up only to discover it was 9 a.m. and he'd missed his flight. Furious, he was about to go and see why his wife hadn't wakened him. Then he noticed a piece of paper by the bed. The paper said, "It's 5 a.m., wake up." Silence is not always a good thing. So I feel like overall I missed my point, because my point of my message was silence, and yet I've been talking for 1 hour and 6 seconds and counting. So I apologize for that, but I do think maybe this was the time for me to be speaking. So just some takeaways. Let's speak when we need to speak, but also be silent when we need to be silent. If you're any bit like me, which I hope you're not, but if you are, there are opportunities in this area to be silent a little more often. And maybe there are some opportunities to speak a little more often when it's appropriate. How often do we say something when it would be better that we'd kept silent? You know, we should trust God and those in leadership positions to silence others when needed. We should practice disconnecting and finding quiet places for Bible study and especially for meditation. And finally, we should aspire to lead a quiet life with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God.